Hello, and welcome to the Green Minds podcast.
Showcasing the science, stories, and solutions behind climate change with Phoebe Scott,
Alex Miller,
Lottie Flashkus,
and Guy Wilkinson.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Green Minds podcast. My name is Guy Wilkinson, and today I'm being joined by none other than Matteo De Renzi, the CEO of BP Chargemaster.
Matteo started the working world at Goldman Sachs before going on to Pirelli,
working his way up to become operations director in Russia. He was also a consultant at McKinsey before jumping into the startup world,
joining Gett as COO of Western Europe, followed by CEO.
Now he's CEO of BP Chargemaster, one of the UK's largest EV charging companies. Matteo, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you guys for having me. Pleasure.
Matteo, I know I've given a bit of a snapshot of your there, but it would be really good to get your take on how and why you ended up taking the route you did, and particularly why you ended up at BP Chargemaster.
Yes, sure. I think an important thing in life is experimenting until you find your real sweet spot. Some people call it ikigai, which is a Japanese word, which in English can be translated as your reason for being. And it's that place that sits at the intersection between what the world needs, what you are good at, what you like, and what you normally you get paid for. That's the sweet spot that I think each of us should keep trying to look for. So I had the chance to do banking, largely because of my passion for numbers. I did operations because I really like having the chance to work elbow to elbow with people. And then I went in consulting and then tech. Clearly, there are a lot of opportunities in that space. And then now I landed into the world of electric vehicles, which is a very exciting industry with incredible opportunities ahead, given the nature of the industry and how big the changes will happen in this industry. And it's a very exciting space to be, which, by the way, is also serving an important purpose, which is try to give some sustainability to our future, hopefully. So it's I think I'm getting closer to finding my ikigai.
That's really interesting to hear. I must admit, on the show, I haven't heard such, I guess, spiritual answer to some extent, and I think I completely agree with you. It is about finding what you're passionate about and what you believe in, certainly. So for those of our listeners who might not be familiar with BP Chargemaster, would you mind just expanding on what it is that BP Chargemaster does, and perhaps also expanding on the opportunity that is EV charging at the moment?
Yes, so Chargemaster is maybe I can start from the second question, if you don't mind.
Yeah, of course, that's fine.
So EV market is booming. It's incredible. So let's talk about the UK, which I guess is more relevant for the audience. Today in the UK, we have around 30 million cars on the road, which of course are traveling less now because of the situation in which the world is. But we have 30 million cars. And we talk a lot about electric vehicles. And that's the only thing I talk about all day long, basically. But today in the UK, we have around 300,000 electric vehicles. So literally 1%, one out of 100. And but the interesting thing is that while the sales of cars using petrol or diesel are literally plummeting, the sales of electric vehicles are skyrocketing. So as a matter of fact, last year, just to give you a sense, in the first 9 months of the year, the percentage of electric vehicles sold was only 2.5% of the new car sale. This year is already around 10. So it's something that is really coming over. But today is still very, very small market. It's just 1%. What we will see in the next few years, and of course it will depend on many factors, we expect by 2025 to have on the road something between 1.5 and 2.5 million cars, million of electric vehicles, which then start representing almost 10% of the whole car park. And this gives you a sense of the size of the opportunity and at the same time the size of the issue, because we really have to build an ecosystem that will allow the adoption of the electric cars. And that's where what we do at ChargeMaster, we provide end-to-end solutions for charging electric vehicles. We provide so-called wall boxes, which are literally a box that you attach on your wall that will allow you to charge your car at home, if of course your house allows. You must have your own driveway, but if you don't, nothing to worry about. We have a network of around 8,000 charging points all over the country that you can access either by an app or by an RFID card, or even pay with your own credit or debit card, almost as a vending machine, if you want. They are all over the country. They are in car parks, they are in supermarkets, in gyms, or more recently, we are installing them in the BP forecourts, where, yes, you can go and charge your car and while at the same time enjoying a coffee or checking your emails, if you want. It's all about the speed. So today, to refuel your traditional car normally takes 8-10 minutes, all in all. Charging an electric vehicle still takes a little bit longer, but there are already cars in the market that will allow you to charge 100 miles in 10 minutes, just to give you a sense. When you reach that stage, then at the end, the time to refill is not too different from the time that we need today to refuel your traditional car. So we are really getting closer to a point of inflection of this market. This is what we do. We are the biggest player in the UK, one of the biggest in the world, actually. I have 330 people in the team. We do engineer, manufacture, install, maintain all our equipment in the UK. And we have our base is in Milton Keynes, which is also one of the most advanced cities in the UK for what concerns adoption of electric vehicles. So a very, very natural place for us to be.
Perfect. Thanks for that summary. It's certainly a large logistical operation you've got there at BP ChargeMaster. I just wanted to touch on a couple of things that you sort of alluded to, but I just wanted to give you the chance to perhaps bust some myths about EV charging, because there are a lot of objections that come from road users that, oh, there are too many networks out there, I have to have so many apps, electric vehicles don't have the range or the performance. So I really just wanted to give you the opportunity to bust some of those myths and perhaps break down some of those perceived barriers to electric vehicles that traditional internal combustion engine vehicle users might think that there are.
Absolutely. If you allow me to use an analogy, I will use an analogy around mobile phone. And I'm concerned that the audience of this podcast is too young to understand exactly what I mean. But unfortunately, I'm old enough to having experienced that. So the first mobile phones that I had was a brand from Northern Europe, something like in 2002, and when I was at uni. And that phone, it took probably one night to recharge, but then I could go charge for full charge for probably 1 week. Okay. And honestly, the only thing we could do is call SMS and Snake, which was like a video game that you probably guys don't know yet.
I remember, it's not too long ago.
Okay. So I guess what you're talking about. So I was in that habit. I was going home or going back to the college in the evening, and if needed, I was plugging it in. But if there was no need, I was just leaving the phone on the table. Today, we have smartphones, which by nature consume more power. And even if they're fantastic machines, they need to be charged more often. So what do we do? We charge them overnight, basically every time. And wherever we are, if there is a chance, we just plug them in. We are in the office, we are at uni, we are at Starbucks, we are in waiting for our flight in an airport, everywhere, in the car. And that, I think, is a good parallel, because this is what is happening in the world, in the transition between traditional fuels to EVs. We went from a world where it was enough to fill our tank once a week, while today the best way to manage your car is actually to charge it every time you can. And surprising enough, it's plenty of opportunities to charge your car. As I said, we have 8,000 charging points, but in the UK there are more than 20,000 basically today. Actually, probably even 25,000 now. That it's growing everywhere. So there is literally plenty of chargers everywhere. But it's also true what you said, that is a market that has grown in a fairly disorganized manner with many, many different players. So for customers, sometimes it's difficult because, as you said, they need to have many different apps or cards to be able to charge across all the points. What I'm saying is that at the end of the day, the infrastructure is growing so fast that I believe that in the matter of months, there would be no need anymore for so many different apps. Yes, you might have one or two, but there would be no need anymore for this incredible complex ecosystem of different interfaces. This is one thing. Another element, which is important, and we are very supportive of that, the government is pushing the industry in the right direction. So all the rapid and ultra fast chargers, so the more powerful chargers, if you want, they need to be contactless. So you can pay at the tap of your debit or credit card without need of any app or any subscription or any membership, which I think will really help the adoption, because we'll just make it very, very easy for everyone.
Okay, thank you. That's definitely a very good and interesting analogy, and I hope that makes it clear. And I think it does require a sort of certain change of mindset on the part of the consumer, but it's not so revolutionary that it's unstoppable. So
and don't forget, sorry if I can say one thing, in the UK we think that between 40% and 45% of people will be able to charge their car at home.
That's interesting. So what is it that's stopping the rest of the other 50% being able to charge their cars at home? Because obviously not everyone has off-street parking, and also lots of people live now in large apartment blocks. That's another interesting challenge for the industry.
That's the barrier. So today, 40-45% of, we believe that 40-45% of households will have the chance to charge at home, either if you have you live in your own, terrace house with a driveway or independent home, or you live in a building blocks where you have underground parking with chargers in every single bay. But yes, there will be more than a half of people that won't have access to public charging, and so to home charging. And that's why it's important to have a network that will support the needs of those customers.
Fantastic. And just to open it up a little bit towards the big picture, we've seen recently Norway, I think, recently hit around 80% electric vehicle adoption. Yes. And that's obviously been helped massively by government subsidies for electric vehicles and taxes on internal combustion engine vehicles. Yep. So I just wondered if I could get your take on whether the UK government might consider something similar. I know they do have existing subsidies in place, but not to the same extent as Norway. So it'd be interesting to get your take on the applicability of those subsidies and taxes to the UK, whether it would work or whether it would be something that the UK government would consider or not.
There are subsidies in place already in the UK. I think Scotland is probably the place where incentives are higher at the moment, in a form of a free loan, if I remember correctly, to buy an electric vehicle, which is very interesting model, I think. For what I've seen, the government has been more focused in ensuring that there is the proper infrastructure in place in order to allow a seamless adoption of electric vehicles. So they decided to push more who invest more in helping the infrastructure to build up rather than on the pure act of purchase of the vehicles. So the support for the infrastructure is coming in many different ways. There is still a subsidy, although it has been reduced at the beginning of the year, that you can buy your own home charger or wall box to charge the car at home with an incentive from the government, which is still there. And then the government has put in place several funds, which not grants, funds, that will allow new players or existing players to extend their own infrastructure in order to provide a better service to EV drivers and break that barrier of that you mentioned before, of range anxiety or being concerned of not being able to charge in the right place. So I think the direction of travel is set. Is clearly is a difficult time for everyone in terms of availability of funds, but I trust that we are, yeah, probably a few years behind the example of Norway, which is fairly unique, if you want, in its own remit. But at the same time, it's quite ahead of other countries, particularly if you think about Europe. So I'm fairly positive.
That's great to hear. Great to hear your optimism as well. Just on one of your points there, obviously, I hate to be stereotypical, but COVID has been hard for a lot of people. And there is obviously a lot of people don't perhaps have the funds to invest in an electric vehicle. But at the same time, despite an initial dip in vehicle sales overall, we've now seen electric vehicle sales as a percentage of sales overall actually increase. So I was wondering if you could just explain why that might be, despite it being at a particularly hard time for a lot of people.
I think it's a combination of a few factors. Point number one, which is the most obvious, is that the cost of electric vehicles for competitive forces and technology is clearly reducing literally quarter by quarter. I think the new Volkswagen ID.3 has gone now in the market for £30,000, if I'm not wrong, which already, you know, start being a very, very interesting value proposition, or at least being accessible to many more potential buyers. So cost of cars is reducing. I think it's becoming more and more evident that the cost of running an electric vehicle is extremely competitive compared to traditional fuels. So when you factor the cost of buying plus the cost of running into one single equation, which is also known as TCO, total cost of ownership, it becomes a lot more convenient for almost everyone to own an electric vehicle than a traditional fuel. So this is one. Second element is, interesting enough, there weren't many offers for leasing electric vehicles in the past, for the reason that there were still big uncertainties about the residual value of electric vehicles at the end of their life. You might remember a few years ago, there were still a lot of concerns about how long the battery will last. Will the battery be robust enough to survive for the whole 10, 12 years of lifetime of the car? We have now the first examples in the world of cars that have done 300,000 miles, 500,000 miles, and the battery is still holding 90% of the original capacity, which I think is taking away that anxiety, concern that the battery could have had the degradation particularly quick. So that has grown the confidence of leasing companies to start offering electric vehicles. And that, of course, helps customers to make the jump. Third, there is a new scheme that has been introduced with the support of the government. It's called the benefit in kind. So if you lease an electric vehicle for corporate reasons, you have a tax shield, which, of course, also helps the adoption in that respect. And I think last but not least, which I trust matters for many people, these overall, and I'm saying something obvious now, but this pandemic, I think, has changed our perspective in general of what we do to the environment, to the world, and for our future. So being totally honest, I think there are people that before were all about big V8s, big SUVs, and you know, big exhaust systems and noise. And maybe today they think, you know what, maybe I cannot do a lot for the earth, but maybe instead of buying my big V8, I'll buy an equally nice electric vehicle, and I'm giving a lightly better chance to the world to survive. And that, I think, is powerful as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with you there. And it's, I think, one of the most interesting points you touched on there was the performance of the batteries are going far better than one might have expected. And I think it was only last week there was an article out talking about a taxi driver who had an electric vehicle in, I think it was in Norway, actually, and he'd hit 500,000 miles.
That's the one I mentioned. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Which is obviously really, really impressive.
By the way, I'm sorry to say, if I can, I've been a petrol head for all of my life. I love cars.
Yeah.
And I had the fortune to driving cars on racetracks, and you know, when I was in Pirelli, and that's amazing. Something really thrills me. At the same time, it's amazing when you start driving an EV. Honestly, I think there is no way back.
Really? That's very exciting. I mean, I haven't had the opportunity to drive an electric vehicle yet, but hopefully I will at some point if someone can lend me a Tesla.
Yes, fun. It's beautiful how, you know, they're so powerful, they're so reactive, they're so sharp in the way that they react to commands, which is just incredible.
Nice, that's awesome to hear. And I guess that's also been a worry for some people, is the performance of these vehicles. But I don't think anybody now can really dispute the performance of the top electric vehicles in terms of, you know, acceleration, speed, responsiveness, technology, and everything's obviously there on a smart screen in front of you, which is really quite incredible. So building on that, I guess the technology aspects, what is the future of electric vehicles more generally? Where are we heading next? What do you see in terms of the future of perhaps autonomous vehicles as well? It'd be good to get your sort of high level insight on that as well.
Again, let's make one step back. In 2010, so 10 years ago, we were all thinking that by now, 2020, we'll be living in a world of driverless vehicles. That hasn't happened for different reasons. It started happening now, but we are still many years behind before seeing a proper adoption of mass adoption of autonomous vehicles. So back then there was this idea that the world would have transitioned in one leap from traditional cars with petrol and diesel to an autonomous world. What's instead happening? There is a very quick transition now happening between traditional fuels to electric vehicles, and this is opening even more, or giving a second life, if you want, to the opportunity of converting those vehicles to driverless. For the simple reason, let alone that an electric vehicle is extremely simple in its architecture. It doesn't require any maintenance, or barely any maintenance, compared to a traditional vehicle. And that is really key if you think about a driverless vehicle that basically has to do everything by itself. So I don't think we will never see autonomous vehicles that are petrol diesel, but I also believe that the quick adoption of electric vehicles will actually accelerate or bring it closer, the adoption of driverless. So, and we are now living in this situation where clearly we are in a transition moment. So we will see autonomous vehicles. It's very difficult to pinpoint a date. There are many first rollouts happening all over the world. I think Waymo in the US is probably the more advanced at the moment, but we will see more and more of that happening all over the world. But let's focus first on the next 10 years to really ensure that we follow the example of Norway and other countries. And I think that would be already good enough.
Yeah, I think that's quite right. Although I was hearing that the majority of Tesla vehicles, I think since, I can't remember the exact year, I think it was like 2017 or something, are all fitted with the software capable of immediate conversion to autonomous driving, which is obviously very exciting. But who knows when that will get switched on, I suppose.
Yeah, be careful, because autonomous driving is can be a very, very broad definition, you know, without going into the specific, but there are five levels of autonomous driving capabilities. The level one is a car that can react, can follow like the lanes along the motorway, keep a certain speed and a certain distance from the car up front, which probably almost all new cars can do already today. Then level two is a car that will allow you to take the ends of the wheel in a slightly more tricky situation. And then you build up until level five, which is basically a car that can navigate in any environment without the need of a driver behind the wheel. I'm not sure if the Teslas are really level five ready in that respect, nor if anyone is. So I think Tesla is amazing. It's a company that I really admire with all my heart. And they are on a very, very difficult but extremely successful journey. And they're an amazing team and an amazing company. But I think it's we need to be mindful before, you know, making too big promises, I think.
That's interesting. We'll keep that autonomous vehicle card in our back pocket now. Bring it back to BP overall, actually. Obviously, BP Chargemaster is part of BP as a whole. And we've seen a massive shift recently with Bernard Looney becoming CEO of BP and wanting to convert BP from an oil and gas company primarily to an integrated and diversified energy company. And obviously, we've heard a lot of promises like that before. So I wanted to get your take on what changes you've seen within BP that suggest that this time it really is real. And how it is that BP are going to make that transition over the next couple of decades.
So, Bernard set a very clear path since he took the reins of the company in February. The official statement and direction of travel is to move from being an IOC, so International Oil Company, to become an IEG, which is an integrated energy group. And today we are in this important but delicate stage where we really have to move the organization from a situation of very high excitement, which is internal excitement in the wards or in the teams, to an excitement that then to an external excitement at the same time, because there is a lot of consensus about the validity of this strategy in the public domain. But we have to move quickly from excitement to execution, because execution will give that credibility to these statements, which then will help us to fuel that change. Why is that different compared to maybe 10, 20 years ago? My answer is fairly simple. I think 10, 20 years ago, pivoting your strategy was an option, which you could consider or not. Today is a necessity, it's a must. So it's and when changing your strategy becomes a must for a company, for its own survival and success, then of course the chances of making that happening are a lot higher, because you build conviction and direction in the business to be sure that happens. So there is less time for digressions, if you want. And that's why I'm confident that regardless of what has happened in the past, this time it will happen. It won't happen automatically. I think everything starts with the people. And I see a lot of new talent coming from different industries joining BP. And as much as it's painful to see colleagues leaving the business, it's public news that we are laying off 10,000 people, because the business needs to change. It's a must. There is no other way to survive. So as much as sad to see thousands of colleagues leaving, is equally exciting and reassuring to see a new tide of talent coming from different industries that are joining the business, because they're all excited and committed to make this thing work. And that's the thing that gives me trust that we are in a different position compared to where we were or where the company was maybe 10 years ago.
So that's interesting as well, actually, because I would have thought that although, of course, BP has a lot of very specialized and a lot of brilliant talent within the oil and gas industry that could be perhaps be transferable to renewables or clean energy. But obviously, there's still that need to hire specialists from outside the business, I guess.
I think there is an enormous amount of talent in BP that is being repurposed to new challenges. BP is a phenomenal machine or phenomenal factory of talent when it's a matter of operation, safety standards, commercial acumen, building partnerships, plus, of course, the traditional oil and gas type of industry. I think that the challenge is more to complement those needed, very much needed skills with new ones that otherwise will take too long to build internally.
Well, thank you very much for that answer. I guess before we wrap up for our final two questions, what's next for the future of BP ChargeMaster?
So we have a lot of new technical innovations coming through, which is very exciting. I think the most recent thing that you might have seen is that we rebranded the company from BP ChargeMaster to BP Pulse. And this is not just a rebadging exercise, but it's really a new way for us to think about electrification. We really want to, with this new brand, we want to express the concept that BP Pulse really wants to make electric vehicles the new easy. We really want to remove all the traditional barriers that might have stopped some of the customers from going electric. And with the BP Pulse, we really want to just allow you to make your life flowing in a totally seamless and effortless way. So we are very busy in rebranding all our posts all over the country. We have rebranded all our digital and physical assets. And by the way, if you still spot a ChargeMaster here and there, ping me a line, because probably we forgot something around the country that still need to be rebranded.
I'll keep my eye out for that. But, no, it's very, very exciting. And I look forward to seeing more of BP Pulse's charge points around the country. Matteo, I'm going to wrap it up just with two final questions. What advice would you have for any graduates or anyone for that matter looking to get into the clean energy sector, or perhaps more specifically electric vehicles or electric vehicle charging?
Yeah, so it's a very good question. And for me, it's behind the obvious, of course, of being open to the challenge and really go for something that you feel close to your heart. And a business that is really driven by a purpose. And of course, a business that is can really make the most out of your skills. My advice is make your own due diligence. The clean energy sector is a nascent industry where there are a lot of companies, many of them still rather small. It's an industry that is allowing many startups to grow, which is amazing. It's very good. But clearly, you have to be mindful to find the company that you think and you trust can really give you the proper support and the proper environment to work within. So it's a very crowded market where, being very honest, there are many, many people talking and many people doing, but there are more people talking than doing, if I can say that, which is normal. When there are industries that are on hype, clearly everyone wants to get in, and then you might have some disappointments here and there. So don't be worried. It's okay to try, but what I'm inviting everyone, when you join a company or before you join the company, really check what's the purpose, what's the culture, what are the people that are already in that company, are they really doing what they say, or they're just, you know, early explorers with not a too good idea on the back. So spend your time in doing that. Speak with friends, speak with mentors, advisors. LinkedIn is an amazing source of information. Use Glassdoor if you can. Don't jump on the first opportunity just because they have a great pitch deck and they offer you free coffee and, you know, free beers on a Friday afternoon.
That comes as standard, surely.
By the way, yes.
great. Thank you for that, Matteo. And one more question, which I suppose is quite similar, but I think what would be nice is to get a more big picture answer. Is if listeners were to take away one thing from this episode of IB Green Minds, what would you want it to be?
I'll maybe go back to my first point. Thinking about young graduates that potentially want to join a very exciting a new sector, which is the clean energy, really draw on a piece of paper these four circles, what you're good at, what the world needs, what you like, and what you normally, and what you can be paid for, and try to find that sweet spot in the middle of the four. Probably there is already the answer to many of your questions on your future.
Perfect. That's some really great advice to finish on, I think. So, Matteo, thanks very much for joining me today. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, and best of luck with everything at BP Chargemaster.
Thank you.